Hi, my name's Londe Yusuf.
And my name is Reggie Williams.
And we're the co-founders of Black Film Space. Black Film Space is a grassroots organization dedicated to enhancing the skill sets of Black filmmakers and building a community of creatives. We host events such as screenwriting workshops, panels, mixers, and other events that are designed to support Black content creators.
In the next episode of the Black Film Space podcast, we interview Jen Ferris, an Atlanta-based location scout. Jen has worked on American Soul, Being Mary Jane, and What Men Want. And recently, she became a board member for the Location Managers Guild. We talk with Jen about her workflow process, taking photos while scouting, building relationships with the location homeowners, and much more. And now, on to our interview.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good today.
Okay, awesome,
pretty
awesome.
Good most of the time. I'll say it that way.
This is a first for us. This is our first location scout interview in our podcast. And, you know, I think a lot of our members are used to like hearing a lot about directors and writers and actors and editors and all those other roles.
Totally.
You know, so it's exciting to talk to someone who is more versed in, you know, the production process on set. So can you talk to us about your trajectory in getting into this?
Well, getting into any entertainment job is always based upon, you know, how people say it's not about who you know, it's about who knows you.
Definitely.
And, yeah. And I've in my life, I've worked in entertainment since 1997, and I've only applied for one job in my whole life. I've worked in entertainment my whole life, except for the one job I didn't work in entertainment. Person who was working in locations at the time, I had never heard of, maybe say 10 or 11 years ago, I had never heard of it. I never heard of any locations job, but locations people don't necessarily have a film degree, but they're the strongest skills that a locations person, whoever wants to work in locations, should have a logistical outlook on the way they approach problems and activities, because locations is the nucleus of the project. The UPM is oversees the project, and the locations, we are the designers of how the on-set pieces look. Like, we determine where the sets are, and then we administer the sets once we land. So, and then we erase the sets when we're leaving. So locations touches the set before there's a set.
Right.
They determine the set, they identify it, they manage it, and they erase or remove it. You know, so they have to have a very or detailed mindset and understand how puzzle pieces go together physically when you're working.
So what are some typical paths into becoming a location scout?
I would always say, I don't think there is a path, but it's good to know other people that work on sets. And it's good to know, I guess one path is, you know, to go to places where other people can get to know who you are, you know, whether it be a film festival. It's all networking. I don't think there's any one way to do anything in entertainment. There's always a back door, front door, window. You can get however you get in. But if you have knowledge of a person who works in a production, a lot of times the UPM might be a good person to know. If not, maybe we're the first ones on outside of the administrative team that's in the office. Locations is a lot of times the next person on board. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to get to know people who work on the staff of a production, like you know, the office staff, and they know us. We're the first ones to be in the office most times, next to accountants. And everything is just word of mouth. I don't know if I'm much help, but that's my reality. I'm hired by phone. Somebody calls me to work. And you know, someone has to take a chance on your skills. But, you know, it's people have to like you to want to even hire you. So those relationships are crucial. But to, I mean, if there has to be a solid answer, I would say network with people that work on set, in the office, production office. That's not a bad place to start. And there are locations organizations like the Location Managers Guild International that has membership open for apprentice members who might not have a lot of experience, but they know that's the direction in which they want to go. So that's a great one. And the website for Location Managers Guild International is locationmanagers.org. That's a wonderful place to start. I would say that's probably an extremely legit place to start to read about locations people and to even consider signing into membership as an apprentice member or a junior, you know, on that junior membership level. Maybe that would be a wonderful place. And every activity that we do, they, you know, they often look for volunteers or people to assist with the programs. I would say that'd be a wonderful starting place. And then, you know, go to a person on the personnel of a production and just ask them if they have any good relationships with the location manager. Maybe you could introduce yourself to that person. Locations are very behind the scenes.
What do you love about this job? What excites you about it?
I'm excited often about being able to determine where that story's backdrop is. Because when I read a script, like I'm given the script, the unit production manager and the art designer, the production designers, we all read the scripts together. Oh, and okay. That's who tells me what to do. The production designers, the art directors, and my location managers often tell me what to do. I'm in direct contact with them all the time because the director is a person who we present the locations to the director, but the director sees them after we've given them some options.
Okay.
They basically look at what I have and say, oh, I like that. Oh, that's nice. Let's go visit that. The director usually has, maybe they might have some input in it as far as the narrowing of the locations. They have a lot to say about it once they've seen the options. But my direction comes from the designers and we all interpret the scripts together. And they sit around a boardroom, actually, almost as if it's a table read. And they walk through what they believe a lot of times what the location should look like. And then the scout's job is to take notes about all those location ideas and actually try to go out and find the match to what they are imagining. So the scout has to have a wonderful imagination, but also has to have a wonderful sense of direction, like where would I find this thing? So it's exciting, back to your question, it's exciting to see something that I imagine would work, and it does. And that ends up being the backdrop of that story. So it's exciting for me too, also to see, I see it in the raw space. I see all of the diamonds in the rough, and then the audience on television or in the theater sees the diamond. So I had to see it rough in my imagination and in person and just go, oh, I think that could work. They just kind of rub a little oil on this and put a little flower over here. That looks like this. Oh yeah, they could do that. You know, I have to be able to have my imagination working too.
I mean, what do you look for in a location?
I'll give you a good example. Like I'll give you an old TV show that used to be on called Sleepy Hollow.
Oh yeah.
Sleepy Hollow was based in the 1800s when the Americas were founded. So, or 1700s. And a lot of the story took place around that 1700 era. So you would guess if the script says walking down the street, well, there's no concrete. They usually walk down dirt roads because that's the material of that era. Or they walk down cobblestone roads, or they were just in the woods. Like America hadn't been founded really, or it was early on. They did a lot of flashbacks to a lot of things that happened in the early 1700s, Civil War, or whatever year it was. So I have to know what era am I scouting for? And because architectural styles changed through the eras. So if I was scouting for American Soul, when you mentioned that, that took place in the 60s, 70s. So in the 60s, 70s, there was a different type of stone that the houses were made of, or the businesses had, they were different. And if in California, 70s looks different than New York 70s. New York's so old, you would just see a brownstone in the 70s. It's the same brownstone in the 1800s, 1900s, 2000s, whatever it is. That brownstone is still the structure in New York. But the interior design might look like the 70s. So I have to be aware of architecture, even furniture design. I have to think about it. It's not my department, but I have to still think about what would have happened in this building. And what would that, could you put a shag rug in this property? Because that's what the designer's going to probably want to do. So, you know, what is the, even small details like sinks and fixtures and the toilet is even something that I have to look for when I'm scouting in bathrooms. You know, paneled wall, those kind of things can be temporarily installed. But it would be cool if I could actually find a toilet that existed in the 70s if we're doing a bathroom scene. So I don't want to go get them, because they don't want to have to detach plumbing and have to install old things. You know, I was very, if you watch American Soul this season, it was the year 1971. And so everything I scouted had to be, this year is 75. Last year was 71. So this year is 75. So I had to find Don Cornelius's house. For example, I found an authentic 1974 California style ranch house that had not been altered since 1974 when it was built. It was authentic.
Wow.
And when the designers saw it, of course they were elated, because he had not changed any of the stone, any of the glass, any of the, barely a fixture. I mean, he had changed a little bit of the kitchen, but the fireplace was still there. The rug was still there. Like, it was still authentic. And as you watch this season, you'll see a lot of authentic spaces in the show. Or they designed a lot of it on set that they couldn't, you know, that they needed to consistently visit. But Don Cornelius' house is real. That's a real house. It was really from 1974. It was a California replica from 1974. And that's my job, is to find as much as I can, find as close to that authenticity as I can. I have to find that, if I can. That's my dream. That's my wish, because it helps to tell the story, and you believe the story when you watch it. You can tell it's not a set.
Sounds like there also needs to be a bit of interior design.
Yeah, the designer's
ability
designer does that.
For you to do your job as well.
Yeah, because what they do is the locations comes first. The conversations about what they want comes first. Then the scout goes out and finds the match. Then the designers, once the director has said, oh, I like that, then the designer takes my real photographs and sketches them. Like, they come up, they have an architect that works on set and they sketch my design on the big shows. And they design it, measure it to see what furniture could we bring into the space. You know, so they use my real photographs to do all of their sketches.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's pretty cool.
That sounds dope.
It is. So it really is.
When you're, can you like paint the picture of what exactly you're doing in the prep and when you're on set? Like, you're taking photos, like what else are you doing when you're on set and when you're preparing to go out and scout?
Well, scout, okay, so once we got the idea, scout goes out and find it. But I have to think logistically, going back to the logistical mind, I have to put on my other hat, because I'm scouting, but now I'm scouting for the art team, the grips, the truck drivers. I have to think about is this the perfect location? But can we drive a truck here to deliver this furniture? Can we film in a way that doesn't disturb the neighbors? Like, do they have an HOA that I have to think about disturbances, or what are the HOA's rules?
What's the HOA?
Homeowners Association. So a lot of homeowners associations in condominiums where properties are owned by multiple people on a property line, they have rules. And some of them say there's no filming here. So I have to determine if they have a homeowners association or some rule in their subdivision, some subdivisions where there's, I'm thinking of housing. Can we solicit, you know, can we put flyers in this community? In an apartment environment, like you might find in New York, how do you get upstairs? Are these steps or are there elevators? You know, so I have to think logistically, can we film in this property? A lot of New York properties have stairs only. Okay, maybe I need to just approach the ground floor property units. Or does the apartment building have an owner that says, heck no, you cannot film here. It's too much of a bother. We also have to think about, after determining the owner's rules, the property owner's rules, I have to consider the insurance for the property. So a lot of the productions have insurance policies that same kind of policies you might find if you're an event facility and you have event rental insurance. We have to worry about insurance also because of property damages. So I always want to know who owns the property so that I can ask them about their property insurance. And a lot of productions provide an insurance policy to say, we'll protect your property if something were to go wrong, or some damage, or, oh, we scratched your hardwood floor. We apologize. We'll cover that in our insurance, but we'll also try our best to just correct it with a vendor that we're going to pay to correct that with. But I also have to think about the distance from the set to where we're parking. So if we have a base camp, how far is the nearest parking place where we can park trucks, the actors' trailers, the hair and makeup trailers? Even if we're on property, what about these bathrooms? Can I bring bathrooms here? Because we're not going to necessarily use the private person's bathroom. Homeowner's bathroom, we might use a porta potty company. Where is this on a hill where we cannot park a porta potty? Is there any surface that's flat around here that we can land a porta potty or a bathroom trailer? You know, I have to think about that. I have to think about the rules for, say, painting. You know, art director might say, you know what, I love this place, but I would love it if it was blue. Can we paint this blue? And if it's plaster on the walls, which you find in a lot of older properties, can I punch holes in your plaster wall? And if the property owner says, hell no, you're going to crack my plaster, then I have to think, well, what are some alternatives for me to put pictures up on the wall? So a lot of productions will say, well, you know what, we're going to budget for temporary wall, and we'll put holes in our temporary walls that go near the surface of your real wall, but they don't touch your real wall. And we'll build it out to where you can't even tell this is not your wall. But, you know, that's a financial thing. So all those, and hey, it might be a property that we're filming in their vintage library that has oak walls. And the owner says, absolutely not. You cannot touch my wall with tape. You cannot touch my wall with nails, and you have to come up with another alternative to design this room. Or I might have hardwood floor and you say, oh, I want to have the character roller skate across the floor. And the property owner is like, not on my floor. So we have to think of surfaces and protections as well. But all that, location scout really has to think about a lot, because I'm not just thinking about the director. And I'm not just thinking about the writer of the story. I'm thinking about every department that has to tell their version of that story. What piece do they have to deliver to tell that story? You know, the art department has to deliver furnishings, artwork, you know, the props department has to deliver those roller skates. You know, the transportation department has to deliver the actors' trailers, the bathrooms. The, you know, the catering department has to deliver snacks for set, if they're still going to allow that after COVID is the COVID return, after we return from this COVID-19. Is there a place for the guy to lay snacks? Maybe, I don't know. You know, what? Where can we have food and that, those kind of things? Where can the wardrobe people deliver the outfits? You know, they have to do hair and makeup on set if there are extras. Can they do hair in this property? Anywhere, somewhere close by? You know, so I have to think about every department when I'm scouting, because it's a reality is that we're not the only people that work on set. There's a team of people that have to, we have to consider all the departments when I'm scouting. I have to consider them.
Can you tell us the difference between a location manager and your role?
So a location manager is the head of our, is the head of the locations department, and under the manager in this hierarchy are location manager. A scout is kind of, I would say, autonomously working. So I answer to the manager. But under the manager are a key location manager, key assistant, basically, is that's a person that's right in line with the manager. If the manager's not available, talk to the key. And then there are assistant location managers who work on set. They are the people who actually execute that life on set, making sure we are listening to the commands of the director, making sure we're listening to whoever needs things on set. And then you have a location assistant who might just be boots on the ground. They're the people who, I don't know if you see the yellow directional signs, they put all those signs out to make sure that people can find these sets, and they handle tents or whatever's needed on set. They're the runners. They run around and make sure everything is in order. But the location scout, my job is just to find what they are envisioning, where the backdrop of these stories take place. The manager's job, and I have to have, I know I have to, almost like the undercover boss, it's good to know what everybody's job is. So when I'm scouting, I am thinking with a manager's hat on, because I'm scouting to make, understand the cost involved with location. So the manager does the contract. He will kind of know what the budget is, or he or she, the location manager, he or she would know what the budget is. So I'm scouting things that fall in that budget. The location manager will say, we need it to be in this proximity of our base camp. Well, then that's on me to find things in proximity of the base camp. The location manager says, hey, we're going to need police. We have a car chase scene, and we're going to need police to be able to control traffic at the edge of our streets. So I need to find a neighborhood that has a street that's controllable. You know, I can't throw the police officers on a freeway because that's just too dangerous. So it's on me to find, as a scout, if the manager says we need to have controlled traffic, then I need to find a safe place for us to film that scene, where the police officers are safe. So I have to know what the goal is that the manager gives, but, and I'm finding things that fall under that manager's wish list. But the managers deal with budgets, the managers deal with permits, because the city has to have approval. We have to have approval from the city or the county or whatever the municipality is to actually film. So the timelines, I have to, as a scout, even be aware of the timeline, so that, because different municipalities have rules, and some of them say we need a 10-day notice for any filming to happen here. So I can't go to a location that's just so hard to get in touch with someone. I have to move on to the next one because I have to stay under that 10-day window or further out. So I have to, even if I'm knocking on doors and no answer, and I can't get an answer, I have to know, as a scout, I got to keep it moving, because we have a 10-day window at minimum that we have to film this scene, notify the city of this scene. So I can't lollygag turning over a stone that's not, you know, trying to turn a stone over that's not turning over. I have to go find another stone. And I have to find another stone that looks just like the stone that they like. You know, if I'm just not having luck, I have to have, you know, multiple options every time I scout. And the manager's job is to make sure that I'm on task. But because I've been scouting so long, I give them the reassurance that I am on task. I don't need them to check up on me. I'm always aware of what's going on. Like, okay, how many days are we filming this in? Okay, I look at the calendar, the production calendar. I'm constantly aware of the production calendar dates because I also have to allow time to prep the location. And I also, for the art department, they have to dress it. They have to paint or whatever they're wanting to do. So I have to know what their calendar timelines are also. You know, it's only fair that I'm aware of what everybody's needs are. And my location scouting is urgent in that way. I have to really be aware of the team, not just my personal, like, oh, let me find a cute house. No, you have to know it's a safe street. You have to know it's a timeline with the municipality. You know, all those things I have to know.
Is there a city that is easier or harder to book locations, like between Los Angeles, New York, and Atlanta? Is there a city that you find to be easier to book locations?
Well, I've only scouted in Georgia. Okay. Like, I'm a Georgia, I fall under the Georgia. Now, I can scout anywhere in the world, but I have only scouted under Georgia's film incentive. But I would say each city is probably unique in itself, in no matter what state you're in, but each city has a county film office or city film office. And I would probably recommend anybody who's scouting to get to know the film office in close proximity of your locations, because they have their own set of rules. Like in Atlanta, for example, we're the big capital city. But outside, just within a 15-mile radius of us, are 6 or 7 other cities. And I touch those 6 or 7 other cities all the time. So, and those cities each have their own set of rules. There's one city that doesn't even require a film permit. But you go 15 miles or less, and there are 4 cities that require not only a permit, but they have a timeline, and you got to have this, and you got to have signatures from the neighbors, and you got to have, so each one is different. But I would say every municipality deserves a phone call to introduce yourself as the scout and just say, hey, you know, I'm working on this project. Are there any rules I need to know about? And one good example in Atlanta is for, and I'm sure this is in other places, Atlanta has a list of properties that are off limits. Inside of their municipality. So they have a rule that says this property cannot be filmed in any longer until further notice. And they won't give you a permit. So I would hate to put all my ducks in a row, put all my cookies in a basket rather, and oh my gosh, you can't film here? You know, so I should know. That's a great question to ask. Because that's what makes it hard to film, are the different rules. You have to know what those rules are.
Does the Chamber of Commerce also factor into this, or are they connected? I'm just asking in case, you know, folks who are listening don't always know how the two are connected.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
And I can give Georgia as another example, and maybe other cities have this, but Georgia has what they've created, just proactively created this network called Film Ready Liaisons. So Film Ready is the department that they've created. It's some of them are volunteers, but they work in different cities around Georgia. And they've allowed themselves to be the go-to person. If you ever come to this city, you can call Luann. And I can say, hey Luann, I'm Jen. I'm scouting your city. Just FYI, I'm looking for these kind of things. If you have any great ideas, I'm here. I'm looking for these kind of things. If you might know some great suggestions, or if you know of any off-limit rules or whatever. And sometimes Luann knows everything about that town. And sometimes she doesn't. But she can refer you to the people that are the go-to for the police. She can refer you to the people who are great to ask about permits. Like, she knows these people by, has their contacts on speed dial. But every town has a Luann, whether she's inside of a group or not. And I always say it's good to call the film office because they know other Luanns. They know other presidents of homeowners associations. They can tell you, you know what? This homeowners association is very strict about filming after the sun goes down. They don't like the noise, and they will put up a fight if they see people filming in their neighborhood after a certain time. So they'll give you the head of the homeowners association's cell phone number. Call her first before you go over here. Or if it's a sensitive neighborhood where they don't like solicitors, then they will share the information through their circle of friends that they already have contacts with. You know, I've had that happen before. And I was scouting a very historic neighborhood that everybody loves filming in. So they're tired. They get sick of it. They get sick of the trucks blocking their parking.
Right.
So they gave me the lady's cell phone. She was like, okay, here are five neighbors you need to personally go introduce yourself to make a face-to-face introduction. I did. And not only did I do that, I handwrote 25 letters. I went above and beyond because this was a crucial film scene. And I wrote 25. I could have photocopied them. I could have printed them and typed them. I could have emailed them. I said, no, we're going to handwrite. I handwrite all of my letters. Like, I handwrite a lot of things. Even if I print them off, I handwrite on top of my printed letter, hey, by the way, here's my phone number. Call me on my cell. And I'll put an arrow. Call me on my cell today at 5 when you get home or whatever. Because people appreciate knowing that. And by the way, that neighborhood was seamless. And one fella of the 5, you know, he's like, he calls me. He says, hey, I need that generator off because it's by my bedroom window. I work night shifts and I need to sleep at blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay. He says at 8 o'clock, I need that generator turned off or whatever he says, 10 o'clock PM. Okay. So at 10 o'clock, I expected a call from him. I expected to call him at 10 o'clock and say, hey, we just turned it off. But he called me at 9:55 and he said, hey, Dan, I'm standing in my window. And I said, hey, look down. And he looks down and I've got my hand on the generator switch. And he's like, all right, Jen, that's what's up. I appreciate that, girl, because I'm tired. And I said, okay. So we had a thing. So he knew I respected him enough to be already by the generator switch. So when he looked out the window, I was like, yo, it's me. I'm here, right? And he's like, boom, thumbs up. We're looking at each other. So people appreciate that. And they wrote the city a letter about that film experience. And they said it was one of the nicest ones they've had. But that makes a difference when you're the scout. I try to give the ALM and the key all my notes. Hey, there's a grumpy neighbor at 555 Brown Street. And they like, oh, thanks. Good looking. They know how to hand glove that neighbor. You know, it's like soft hands. But if I don't tell my team, yo, there's a grouch at XYZ address, just be aware of it, then they will be over there doing things and get cursed out or whatnot. You never know. And I don't like to solve problems when they come. I like to get in front of a potential problem. I don't like problems. So I try to get in front of them and stay in front of them so that I don't have problems. And I don't think my coworkers deserve to have problems. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That's dope. I try to
eliminate them. It's just fair. It makes everybody's film experience great. If I can eliminate a problem, that's beautiful for the entire crew. So I try to be that girl. You know, people say that girl, she that girl. I try to be that scout. You know, when I'm scouting, I try to be that scout because it makes it seamless for everybody. And it's such a good experience for everybody and the neighbors.
How long does it take to book a location and what are the steps in order to secure the location?
I don't think there's a, say, set time. The timelines a lot of times begin with the production itself. So the production has a timeline. And you hope that if I knock on a location, a property, that I can at least within 2 weeks secure it 100%. That would be awesome. To secure it within 10 business days would be awesome. But the real timeline is probably 1 month or 3 weeks, because I can scout a location, but then the director wants to go visit it. Now, this is pre-COVID. I'm talking about how we did it before the COVID-19. Right. So before COVID-19, this was how we did it. I would scout it. The designer would look at my photographs on the computer and then go, oh, I want to go visit. And then they would go visit. And then the director would say, I want to go visit. Like, a bunch of people want to visit. This was the pre-COVID-19 life. And I would guess that all those visits used to be within a 2 weeks window, and then they would sign a contract. Post-COVID-19 is going to probably be different. And from the conversations I'm hearing, there are going to be a lot of virtual visits. So they'll look at my photos virtually. And I don't know how it's going to work, because a physical walkthrough is so important when you're planning to film somewhere. So I don't know how that's going to work going into post-COVID-19 or while we're in the pandemic. Because a lot of people will start filming while we're in this pandemic. So it's probably going to require that the scout is extremely thorough with taking every angle of that space, so that if someone can't see it with one angle, then I have 50,000 other angles of that space. I think that's where my life is about to be.
Do you have any tips for taking photos?
I've always been told to take photos in every direction. You know, from the far, I always tell people, stand with your back against the wall and photograph it on a 35 millimeter, you know, something that doesn't skew the photo, you know, don't stretch it out, but in a reel with your real 20/20 vision, we'll see it in a certain way. But I think most cameramen shoot on 35. I'm just guessing that. So whatever your cameraman is shooting on, photograph it that way, because they want to see it. And personally, I photograph sitting down. Not saying sitting down. I squat a lot when I photograph, because a camera crew is squatting. So most cameramen are either standing or squatting. So I photograph it standing and squatting. You know, I have to see it from the way they're going to see it, the way they're going to film it. And a lot of cameramen are not all standing. So I personally, and I also think about it too, if a character is a kid, I want to know what they're going to see from their point of view. Like, I photograph, if the character's a child, they're going to see things lower. So I'm guessing the cameraman will be lower when they film from that child's perspective. So I might photograph it on my knees. You know, I have to think about all those things, those little nuances. But I think my designers and my directors and the managers really appreciate that I think about it like that, because I'm say 5'7", I'm making this up. Everybody is not 5'7". So I can't photograph it so high up, you know. I have coworkers that are scouts that are 6'2", and everything they photograph is so tall. I can tell when they've turned in their pictures, because they're so much taller than my perspective was when I photographed the same room. They're seeing things that I didn't see because I'm short, you know, or shorter than them. And this is a very good example. I had a location manager that was a veteran, and she was the first person to tell me, if the scene is at a dining room table, sit down and photograph at a restaurant. Say, for example, they say, oh, the characters are on a date eating dinner. Don't photograph their conversation standing up. Sit down at the table and photograph the scene from the seat of the characters that are talking. Photograph it from the maitre d' stand. Photograph it from the front door. If they're walking in, I have to basically, you know what, this is the long and short of it. My scout photo should be a storyboard. If it says they get out of the valet, walk to the front door and go sit down, I have to stand where the valet would be. I have to stand where the front door is. I have to stand where the table is. If they say, oh, the character can see the cook in the kitchen, then I have to see when I'm scouting, is there a perspective that allows the kitchen and my table to see each other? Like, it has to match the story. And when they flip through my photographs, they're flipping through them as if they're reading. I should be able to, my photographs should be the words on that page, 100%. And she was the first manager that told me that, and it actually changed my life. It changed my career. It created work for me. And it allowed the director, the designers to see the story through my photographs, not just, oh, she took a picture of a room. Okay, yeah, all right, whatever. But can I tell the story when I'm looking at her pictures? Because they're gonna visit that location, and I have to sell that location through my photographs. I can't see it. I've had one of the scenes coming up. As a matter of fact, if you all watch, I don't know when this will air, but American Soul has a scene coming up where a character is outside of a house. It's coming up this Wednesday if this airs in time. But if not, whatever, it's the third episode. And I scouted this house that you're going to see. The character's fussing, without telling too much of the story, the character's outside showing her butt. The person in the house can see her from the house. So when I was scouting that house, I had to see what that would look like from every window of that house. Is the character looking outside the front door? Boom. Is the character looking outside the bedroom window? Is the character looking outside the living room window? Or is it looking out the kitchen window? So I had to scout out of every window possible in the front of that house, because I don't know where the director's going to want the character to see her. So I can't assume the front door only. Hell, the character might walk and be like, what the hell? And then go to another window. Who is that? You know, they might walk around. Who is that outside my house? And then open the door. So they might go to multiple places to see this character outside the door. Outside the house. So I have to photograph it for the what ifs as well. I have to put my imagination on, and that's what I show them. Every scenario possible to tell that story.
Can you talk a little bit about how insurance plays into your role?
Well, it comes through production. So it doesn't really come through locations. We present the homeowner or the property owner with the policy, but the policy is generated through the production office. After they have determined the location and have a solid owner's name and address, that's when I hand that information to the production office and their attorney, whoever it is. If it's large enough a production to have an attorney or whoever the production manager is, they generate that insurance policy. And I don't know the names of any companies off the top of my head, but the policies that I have executed have, like the productions have executed in my hand, were like $1 million coverage. They were like $1 million coverage, which I don't know how much that is, but every policy is different.
But sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. Every policy company is different, but I think the productions I work on try to cover $1 million.
And does the location impact the type of policy the production tries to get? You know, do they ever need specific information from you to kind of make that determination or anything like that?
Well, sometimes in this example, if I scout a house that has hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of art in their house, or expensive designer furnishings, or marble floors, those kind of things might boost up their insurance policy. I've worked on a project where they had an insurance policy and they had a bonded moving company that removed the art from the house and put it in a secured place. I always tell properties to absolutely remove your jewelry from the house. But they had very expensive artwork, statues, and ivory. It was blowing out of control, this house. But they had like 7 foot tall pieces of art hanging on the walls that were custom made for that house, you know.
Wow.
So we had to bond a moving company and a bonded security firm. Like it was not hard to do, because even Porsche into Porsche, we got the contact from Porsche. Porsche Cars, they have headquartered in Georgia, and Porsche actually gave us the number to a bonded art dealer, an art company removing, because they have to bond their cars whenever they move the cars from place to place. So they knew of a really high-end company that dealt with that kind of thing. So, but yeah, museums would also be a great resource to know if you have a lot of artwork, maybe who would be a great bonded company that moves art. You know, that might be a good place to ask. A gallery or a museum might be a great place to ask also.
A lot of independent filmmakers and or filmmakers that are just starting off have pretty tight budgets for locations. What tips can you offer for them?
Well, I don't think there's any excuse, and I tell independent filmmakers all the time, there's no excuse not to have insurance. You should have it. If you are planning an event at a club, as a promoter, a DJ has to have, an event planner has to have insurance. So a filmmaker should absolutely have insurance, and they should also have security. Those are things that are not very expensive that are, I believe, should be a part of your foundation. There also should be, and I'll give you this great example. If I film in a house that has a hardwood floor, I might not be able to afford to pay for a company to lay out rubber mats to protect that hardwood floor, but I can go out and buy some cardboard boxes and put painter's tape on top of the box, not on the floor. So that at least when we're rolling our equipment in and out of this property, I'm not scuffing their hardwood floors or their linoleum white kitchen floor or their marble kitchen floor, or I'm cellophane wrapping their marble countertop. You know, I'm doing things that I can at least go to Home Depot and purchase, or go to a box place and cut up a cardboard. You know what I mean? Like, there are things you can do that are very cost effective that will save you from your neck being chopped off at the end of that production. You know, I would rather spend money on a cardboard box than I would having to replace this marble tile. And those are three things: protections for the property, you know, inexpensive protections, bubble wrap, cardboard, even rugs, whatever you got to do. That's one. Insurance policy, absolutely protect yourself there. Very inexpensive. And security, because, and one thing I can say that was great, I worked on a production where there was a real intense desire to know who we were versus who was walking from off the street. So we bought wristbands. And that's a very inexpensive way. You can go to Party City, or you can order them custom, you know, from a party event, whatever. And wristbands identified us from people off the street. And that gave the homeowner just a sense of security, knowing, wow, they thought about us enough to show us respect, to identify us with laminate, name badges, or a wristband, so that we know Blow Joe ain't walking in on my house. You know, they were kind enough to provide a security guard at the door who was checking the wristband. You know, even if it's just for a couple of hours, that's just a nice courtesy that is not a very expensive thing to do. And it really goes a long way. As a homeowner myself, I would be very appreciative of that. And I feel a sense of you know, pride when I know that the homeowner will speak kindly of us when we leave, which for me as a scout helps me the next time, because I keep relationships with neighborhoods, and I'm a pen pal, honestly, real straight up. Like, I reached out to a guy the other day, like, hey, your episode's coming on American Soul this Wednesday. I know you want to see it. So he was like, oh my God, you kept my number. I'm like, yeah, you know, like, and I remember when I scouted, he said, oh my God, keep me posted when this airs. Well, hey, it's about to air. So I kept his number and he appreciated. But guess what? The next time I scout his block, I can pick up his phone and say, hey, Mr. Kenneth, you know what? I'm having a little trouble getting in touch with your neighbor. Can you call them for me? And he would be like, heck yeah, Jen. Boom. His phone call might get me in the neighbor's house, you know, because he respects me. I've shown him enough personal time and respect to where if I'm having trouble in his block, he can probably pick up the phone and say, hey, let my girl Jen come on by, you know, scout Jen. You know, that helps me. So I'm really almost anal about it, because I scout a lot, and the relationships are everything. Relationships are everything. It makes my life so much easier if I remember that they said their child has a birthday coming up, and I'm like, oh my God, happy birthday. How was the birthday? Oh, you remember that? You know, it's little things. People are human. I might want their location for business, but the owner is a human, and I have a human sensibilities, you know. I really respect people. So I want them to know that our crew is full of people and we are going to respect your home. At least that's my hope, you know, because I'm betting on it that we will do it. Mm-hmm. You pray, Lord Jesus.
Congrats on becoming a board member of the Location Managers Guild.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting.
That's good. That's a great organization.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about it? And then also your role?
Yeah. Well, Location Managers Guild is a nonprofit full of members from all over the world. So not just me scouting here in Atlanta, Georgia, but scouts from literally all around the world. We all have the same dealings, processes, issues, thoughts, but that organization lumps us together as a team, like we're bonded through this nonprofit. And we discuss, you know, tips, tricks, hints, whatever it is that, like we're about to learn about some new technologies together. Tomorrow we Zoom every week and it's wonderful. Whoever wants to log in as a member can join, but memberships range, you know, like I said, there's apprentice members, membership levels, all the way to pro members, which is what I am. And I think I pay $130 a year as a pro member. But pro members are referred into the business, into the organization, and we have application, and it's really great. As a board member now, you know, as a new position, I'm a part of the, you know, I'm active on committees, but I'm a part of the thread that's gonna create the fabric for the next, whatever, 2 years. So from events to even just finding ways for us to communicate virtually, because we have members all around the world. So that's kind of, you know, our goal is now is to find the really creative ways to communicate. We have annual awards, Location Managers Guild Awards, because locations honor awards. You hear awards for best picture of the year at the Academy Awards, but you never hear about best location. So locations are honored annually through the Location Managers Guild. And it's just wonderful, from commercial projects to features to shorts to like Chernobyl, when that movie came out, I got to meet the people who worked on that. They're members, you know, La La Land, Green Book, like all these people are in our database, and they determined where the Green Book in the movie, where they drove the car. You know, these people helped determine where Black Panther did his fight scenes, and it's just great.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, so Wrinkle in Time, like you name it, these people are part of our group. So I'm honored to be on the board. I was elected to the board seat. I'm really excited about being able to bring some creative ideas to the table. But we have great people all over the world that are also on the board. And it's really cool.
Nice. Well, thank you very much, Jen, for your time and your insight. I learned a lot of good tips on it. Something that's very Likewise. Important to filmmaking and storytelling. So thank you. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us?
Well, if anyone wanted to get in touch with me, is that something I could share?
Yeah, if you have a social media or email address.
Yeah, I use my website has everything linked. So it's jen-farris.com. And that just spells Jen-Farris. And I'm going to start putting some really cool things on there, but that's a good way to reach me. At least then I could always forward anything else if somebody was interested in knowing about anything else.
Okay. All right, cool. Thank you very much, Jen.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Black Film Space podcast. If you're interested in being part of our community and attending events, please visit us at blackfilmspace.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Black Film Space. Subscribe to our email list and podcast. All right, see you soon.